And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is disbelief. All of my guests are discussing ideas that we may not believe. My next guest is a noted skeptic and researcher. He debunks widely held beliefs from ghosts and gods to politics and conspiracies. We'll discuss the findings in his latest book, The Brain. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Michael Shermer is the founding publisher and editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine and the director of the Skeptic Society. He's a visiting associate at the California Institute of Technology and hosts the Skeptics Lecture Series at Caltech. Michael has authored several popular books on science, scientific history, and the philosophy and history of science. His latest book is titled The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. He's also a radio personality and host of the Fox Family Channel's Exploring the Unknown. Michael received his BA in psychology from Pepperdine University, his master's in experimental psychology from Cal State University Fullerton, and his PhD in the history of science from Claremont Graduate University. Joining us from Los Angeles, California, Michael, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for having me, and I was a little worried about today's interview because there were some people out there that were saying Judgment Day was going to be May 21st, 2011. That was going to be the end of the world, and I wasn't sure we were going to get here to today's interview. But
yeah.
Saturday came and went. We're still here. I hear you laughing in the background there.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, my mortgage is still due at the end of the month, and I got to go to work tomorrow.
Sadly, I didn't say anything. Sadly, I didn't say anything to my boss either about this. That could have been cataclysmic.
You know what, though, that apparently Camping offered his employees Friday off as a paid vacation. However, they don't actually see the payment until their next paycheck, which is at the end of the month, which means somebody there must have had some doubts about Saturday because
well,
they were still planning on cashing in their paychecks at the end of the month.
And that's a very good observation, Michael. But it brings up the bigger question of what actually happens when these cataclysmic days come and go. What happens to the believers, the ones that believe that this is going to happen?
Well, usually they rationalize the belief around. Like this morning, one person said that, and I predicted this is exactly what somebody would say, is that the world did end spiritually, not physically, and that this is a new spiritual rebirth, renaissance, second coming, and so on. Of course, it doesn't look any different from the other day, but hey, that's one way to do it. Or you go quiet. Like Camping apparently has yet to be seen today, or last 2 days. Unusual, however, is the guy Robert Fitzpatrick in New York that spent the $140,000 on billboards in New York subways. That guy was all over the news.
Mm.
This morning he issued a statement and he said, I was wrong.
He actually admitted it.
I fell off my chair. I couldn't believe it. Almost nobody says I was wrong. So even scientists hardly ever say I was wrong. It happens so rarely. It's a very unusual thing for people to say.
Well, now, it is hard.
Yeah, it makes you feel anxious, like, well, what else might I be wrong about? And we have to remember, even though this was an easy target for us all to giggle at and late-night comedians to write jokes about, but in fact, Christians do believe this, that there will be a second coming, there will be a judgment day, they will be raptured to heaven. It's just that most Christians say they don't know the date. No one knows the date. But by the polls, like the Pew Forum polls and the Gallup polls, most Americans believe it will happen in their lifetime. Well, that turns out to be very common. Everybody thinks their generation is the special generation, going all the way back to Jesus, who said in Mark chapter 7, I think it was, that that people standing here today will not taste death before they see the Son of Man come again, the Son of God come again, and that never happened. And that was, you know, 33 AD. So ever since then, for 2,000 years, people have been making predictions about the end of the world. And the fact that they haven't come true doesn't seem to slow people down. They still believe that it will happen.
Well, and that is part of your book, The Believing Brain. We're talking to the author, Michael Shermer. And you mentioned polls. I've got some numbers for you from a poll in 2009, which I found very interesting. A Harris poll in 2009 polled 2,303 adult Americans, and they found out that of those Americans, 82% believed in God, 76% believed in miracles, 75% in heaven, 72% in angels. Interestingly enough, there was a lot of belief in God, a lot of belief in heaven, but only 60% of those same people polled believed in the devil, surprisingly to me, too, 45% of those people polled believed in Darwin's theory of evolution, and 32% believed in UFOs. So it was interesting because more people believed in angels and the devil than believed in evolution. And you say in your book that even though percentages may vary slightly across cultures and across time, the majority of people hold this same sort of belief. So you've gotten to the root of the matter here and found out why it is we believe. You've got a theory called belief-dependent realism. What is that belief?
That is, reality exists, but the only way to understand it is when it's filtered through our senses and processed by our brain. Unfortunately, the Enlightenment vision of human nature, that we are rational, calculating machines, that our brains are like computers that process all the data that comes in and sorts through it and then picks out the best data, that just isn't how it works. The way it actually works is that we form our beliefs first, and then we collect data or evidence to support that belief. So this is true for religion, politics, economics, social attitudes, even science. Scientists who have pet theories that they want to support will unconsciously, called experimenter bias, unconsciously sort out the data to fit only what their theory says. Now, that said, science itself has built-in self-correcting machinery that says if you don't look for contradictory evidence, somebody else will, and that's what sets science apart. The peer review system, the insistence upon replication of your results, that you publish your paper, you explain exactly how you did your experiment so somebody else can do it. All that's there for a reason. There's a reason that journals like Science and Nature require you to sign a disclaimer saying and announcing any financial conflicts of interest that you might have. That is, if your data, if your experiments are funded by a tobacco company or a drug company and you're doing research on that very subject, well, we all know that there's a problem of conflict of interest there. And that's what I'm talking about. That, in fact, all beliefs are like that. They all begin with a belief of some sort or another, and then you reinforce it by collecting evidence to fit it. The belief comes first. The evidence for it comes second, the rational reasons for it. So we're not really rational calculators. We're emotionally driven machines that then employ reason in the support of our beliefs. We're more like lawyers than scientists. You know, a lawyer's job is to defend his client to the best of his ability, regardless of the evidence. You got to sort through the evidence and try to bury the stuff that doesn't look good for your client and present only the stuff that helps your client. You better do that. And that's what our brains are like. They're more like lawyers than scientists.
Well, it's interesting, Michael, because in your book, you assert that the brain is really a belief engine. How so?
Yep. Well, that we can't help but make form beliefs and associations and connections. If you set a subject down in front of a computer screen and you flash in front of them random dots on a page, they won't see random dots. They can't. The brain cannot see randomness. It always finds a pattern of some sort, whether it's, you know, a sequential pattern of dots or noises, sounds, tones, or just scattered dots on a page, black and white dots on a page. A pattern will emerge even if there's nothing intentionally there. I'm sure you're familiar with all the stock market newsletters that are produced. You know, there's thousands of them.
Sure.
And every one of them has graphs and charts, you know, and I've got the secret. I know what the stock market's going to do. Well, everybody's really good at it after the fact, fitting the data to fit, you know, after the fact. It's easy to do. Predictions are hard to make, especially about the future, as Yogi Berra said. And that's the problem. Our brains are it's called the hindsight bias. After the fact, we can construct beautiful causal explanations for why things had to unfold as they did. And you can watch this every night on any MSNBC or any of the stock ticker type shows where, you know, they'll explain, well, the market went down. Why? Oh, because Obama said this, or the Congress did that, or the Federal Reserve raised the interest rate, whatever it is. But ask them, well, what's it going to do tomorrow? Nobody knows. And so our brains are really good at hindsight, but not foresight. And that's, you know, that's the belief engine, that you start off making associations, connecting the dots. A is connected to B and B is connected to C, and we're really good at that. What we're not good at is telling which patterns are real and which are not.
All right, so we're good at finding patterns, we're good at assigning meaning to those patterns, but not very good at predictive. We're talking to the author Michael Shermer, author of The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. And in your book, you get so many great examples, but in your book you really tackle everything from politics to economics. And one of the more interesting observations that I found is the blindness of both the left and the right when it comes to two ideas, evolution and free market economies. And both of them look at it in a very incongruous sort of way. So talk to me about the left and how they view both the topic of evolution and free markets, and the right, how they view evolution and free markets, and why both sides are wrong.
Yeah, the left tends to accept evolution, but are skeptical of free markets. They don't think that economies operate from the bottom up, although they do recognize that evolution does, and really it's the same process. They're both bottom-up, self-organized systems, complex systems. The right, on the other hand, tends to be skeptical of evolution, but recognizes that economies are driven from the bottom up by just people running around trying to make a living and support their families. And you don't need too many top-down controls. Now, you need some. The analogy is not perfect. I mean, people will cheat in an economic system that they can, so you need some rules. But within the rules, it's best to, you know, just leave people alone and let them do what they want, you know, economically speaking, I mean. So there, the left and the right are both influenced by their tribal beliefs. I mean, it's like, well, these are our core set of beliefs. This is what we believe. And if you don't, you probably wouldn't be a liberal or a conservative if you didn't hold to those central tenets. So one of those for conservatives is that free markets, you know, work better than government controls. And on the left, it's just the opposite. And on the right, if, you know, you believe that evolution means atheism and therefore it must be wrong because we believe in God, well, then of course you're going to reject it. But not for scientific reasons, for religious reasons or political ideological reasons. And so all sides, left, right, and even libertarians on the one side, or maybe green or Marxist on the left, super far left, you know, they're all biased by this. They listen to certain talk radio shows or read certain books to reinforce what they already believe. And it's pretty discouraging in terms of trying to think of us as rational beings. We're not very rational. We're pretty emotional, in fact.
Well, it's an interesting thing. But in the book, The Believing Brain, you also talk about the blindness that they have. I mean, a conservative cannot see the fact that while he believes in a free market system, he can't acknowledge evolution as being a possibility. And a person on the right who may very much believe in evolution as a theory can't apply that same to the free market systems. How can they be so blind to it and yet look at what is essentially the same problem and come up with two completely different answers, Michael?
Yep, well, that's the power of it. I mean, it's like, how can two different scientists look at the same global warming data and one says I'm skeptical and the other one says I'm a believer? You know, they have different models. The models interpret the data. So the problem is the facts don't just speak for themselves. All facts have to be filtered through brains, through models of the world, through theories, hypotheses, guesses, ideas. And so the facts don't just speak for themselves. We interpret them. And therein lies the problem. That's where the biases kick in. And so I believe X because of all these other subjective reasons, and I can give you lots of rational reasons for why I believe what I do, but in fact there's all these other biases. Like, for example, if you ask somebody why they believe in gun control, say, a liberal, they'll give you rational arguments for it. But if you ask them why they think conservatives are against gun control, they'll give you emotional reasons. Oh, those conservatives, you know, they just like violence, or they like killing things, or they like hunting, or whatever. They won't say, you know, because of freedom or because it lowers crime or anything like that. And the right will do the same thing in the opposite direction. It's just, it's a bias that we have about attributing to others emotional reasons for their belief, but attributing to our own beliefs rational reasons.
We're talking to Michael Shermer. All right, Michael, let's take your theory of belief-dependent realism and apply it to some conspiracy theorists around the attacks of 9/11. How does it go into play there?
Oh, right. Well, so the 9/11 truthers believe that, well, okay, let's admit, it is a conspiracy. 19 members of Al-Qaeda plotting to fly planes into buildings without telling us ahead of time constitutes a conspiracy. What the truthers think is they think that conspiracy doesn't jive. And what it is a form of cognitive dissonance, that the size of the cause should match the size of the event. So 9/11 is this huge event. And the rhetoric sounds something like this. You mean to tell me that 19 guys with box cutters talking to some guy in a cave managed to pull this off? That just seems impossible. It must have been a big, big job. You know, the Bush administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld and the CIA and the FBI and the military are all in on it. And you know, and this and that and the other had to all happen. And, you know, that's the kind of, like with Princess Di, you know, what's the cause of Princess Di's death? is drunk driving, speeding, no seatbelt. Well, that doesn't seem right. She's a princess. It had to be something big and sinister, a cabal by the royal family, or JFK assassinated by a lone nut, you know, the leader of the free world, smart, articulate, handsome, was brought down by this crazy guy. That doesn't seem to fit. So conspiracy theories, in part, are attempts to, I guess, square the circle of our emotions, like make it match somehow, that the size of the event is matched by the size of the cause. And so with the truthers, what they do is they look for any kind of minutia within the government story that doesn't seem to jive, or it's wrong, or the government made a mistake. We have to remember, in the fog of war or chaos like that, that there's always going to be errors. So, like, even after Osama bin Laden was killed, you know, the first stories out within an hour were, you know, that he was, there was a lot of combat and gunfights, and the Navy SEALs had to fight their way in. And then later they said, well, no, actually they didn't. You know, we got that wrong, but here's what actually happened. So, of course, the conspiracy people jump all over that. They go, aha, you see, they lied. No, they didn't lie. They just, it's a complicated story, and, you know, we're going to get a few things wrong, and then we'll correct it and move on. But to the conspiracy theorist, that's evidence of a cabal. And that's what fuels that sort of thing. And then you add to it the power of the Internet. You know, these 9/11 truther films that they made, like Loose Change, you know, it's been viewed by, you know, 10 million people. I mean, there are Hollywood producers who would kill for numbers like that if they actually had to pay for it. You know, those are huge numbers. Well, that's what fuels these things. And they get legs, and they just drive. I mean, the deathers, you know, the people that believe that Osama wasn't dead, that they were on the scene within hours. By Monday morning, there was already a deather movement afoot that it was a government cover-up and that he wasn't really dead.
Oh, my. We've got birthers, we've got deathers, we've got all sorts of labels running around. And unfortunately, Michael, we're out of time. But if people like what they hear from you, they want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, The Believing Brain, or even Skeptic Magazine, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Skeptic.com.
Skeptic.com, and they can find out all about the magazine, all about you there. The book is The Believing Brain, From Ghosts and Gods to Politics and Conspiracies, How We Construct Beliefs and Reinforce Them as Truths. Michael, it has been a pleasure. We didn't have nearly enough time to explore all that I wanted to. We'll have you back, I'm sure, in the future. Thanks for being a guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks.